Now, I got to ask you guys a question because we saw you on television this week. You had a rough go of it.
I'm not going to lie to you. Don't talk about that.
In light of that, you guys are stepping into the ring tonight with two guys that I know you are very familiar with, Rich Swann, Willie Mack. No pushovers. Are you guys ready? How are you feeling? Are you ready for that match?
Of course. We got a lot to prove, and right now this is for you, Matt. We're dedicating this match to... What you mean?
Uh-oh.
What you mean? I tried to call him.
I'm not cool, man.
A little trouble in paradise right now?
A little trouble in paradise right now. If you saw what happened Wednesday, you know.
Come on, he's probably be watching this.
All right, well, look, it all goes down tonight.
Tag him in this.
These two guys right here back home taking on Rich Swann and Willie Mack.
It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered.
You're like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
SmackDown sucks. It's almost as bad as Raw.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and fight me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Solo Monster? Who are you to doubt El Dandy?
That was AEW's private party that you heard there. Isaiah Cassidy and Mark Quinn, who returned home to House of Glory last night, just a few days after Keith Lee debuted on AEW Dynamite and launched Isaiah into another dimension. I was surprised to see him. I thought he was still in orbit. And I asked him about that, and a very interesting response when Mark Quinn brought up Matt Hardy. Isaiah's got heat with Matt. After Matt walked out on them on Wednesday night, maybe one step closer to Private Party breaking away from the Hardy family office. Well, what a fucking show last night. If you weren't there live, I really hope it hits Fight TV in the next couple of weeks. Because Private Party, Rich Swann, and Willie Mack tore the house down. And that wasn't even the main event. We had a co-main event. We had two main events, and that wasn't even part of it. But Willie Mack is insanely good. I mean, if you watch him, you already know that. I already knew that from his days in Lucha Underground. But my God, to call that match, all four of those guys, but especially Willie, he should not be able to do the things that he does in that ring. But it is a Super Bowl Sunday edition of the Solo Monster Sounds Off here for February 13th, 2022. I am the Solo Monster, Super Bowl 56. Is at SoFi Stadium tonight, the home of next year's WrestleMania. It was supposed to be the home of last year's WrestleMania before COVID ruined everything. The Los Angeles Rams and the Cincinnati Bengals. I throw out a prediction every year. This year, I'm picking the Rams to win. I know the Bucks have never won a Super Bowl before. And LA had to beat Tom Brady to get there. That alone should make them the favorites. That they beat the best of all time. So I got the Rams for the win. I'll go 28-24 is my prediction. Pro Wrestling Tees is having a Super Bowl flash sale today. Now until the game ends, you can get 20% off all shirts in our Sound Off store when you use the code SUPERBOWL at checkout. Just go to prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. If you want to make a PayPal donation, you know the place to go, thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. I want to say thank you to all of our PayPal producers for this week, including Night Stalker, Naif Alsafar, Big B Brian Becerra, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Killshot Keith Hart, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, The Chicago Slayer Willie Eicher, The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine Harrison Soep. Put a little something extra on that. New York Punk, Arnold Modesto, John Raging Mad Riffle, Bernard Choo Choo Wilson, The Pastor of Pain, Damian Yule, Sherrod Big Daddy Boyd, who celebrated a birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, brother. I hope it was a good one. Speaking of birthdays, we've got the birthday boy, Robert Davis, whose birthday is today. So happy birthday to him. He's been a fan of the show since 2013, so thank you very much. Jay from Philly. Jason Byard, first-time donator, been a big fan of the show since 2015. We've got Elimination Chamber coming up in less than a week. And I believe Jay was at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view 2 years ago, right before the pandemic shut everything down. The Chosen Son, Andre Smith. I want you to check out his podcast called Wrestling Artistry, where he recaps AEW Rampage and NXT 2.0, along with some wrestling news and history. He also puts out digital artwork on wrestlers. He's got some pretty wicked cool artwork up on his website of CM Punk and MJF, Darby Allin. So check out his work on his website, WrestlingArtistry.com. And finally here, shout out to the man of the year, Matt Oman, who is planning to write and publish a book taking some of WWE's worst booking decisions and making them better. He's putting it in book form. Right now, he has a GoFundMe set up to assist with the costs involved. You can search for it under the title Fixing the Stories. That is going to be the name of the book. That is also the name of the GoFundMe campaign when you search Fixing the Stories. And when you donate $20 or more, you get to choose a chapter topic for the book and be acknowledged for doing so. So again, Fixing the Stories is what to search for on the GoFundMe website. I mentioned that I was going to be doing another episode of the call-in show for channel members on YouTube. Better Call Saul Monster. I pushed it back by a week, so instead of this past Thursday, we're doing it this Thursday. And I figure, because I was so busy with prep for House of Glory and podcast stuff, and I said, you know what, it's going to be better anyway. It's a couple days before Elimination Chamber. I'm sure people are going to have questions and predictions and comments about that. So this Thursday, mark it down. Probably same as last time, around 8:30 Eastern Time. Better Call Saul Monster, the latest edition for all channel members on YouTube. You guys will get to call in and chat with the Saul Monster. And I'm also very excited to announce, I mentioned this the other night, for those who don't know, we hear a lot about the so-called Forbidden Door in wrestling to the point of nausea, I know, but we got a little bit of a podcast Forbidden Door going on here in a couple of weeks, because I am going to be sitting down with Don Tony on his YouTube channel, and that's going to be on Thursday, February 24th, so I will let you guys know as we get closer, but been a long time in the making. So I'm going to venture on over to his YouTube channel and sit down with him probably for a couple of hours and shoot the shit and talk wrestling and probably take your live questions as well. So you can find that on his YouTube channel. That's Thursday night, February 24th. The Saul Monster and the Don sit down to talk about wrestling. But back to last night's House of Glory show real quick. I don't want to spoil any outcomes for when it does eventually air, but what a show. I mean, House of Glory, Repentance, everybody on that card just absolutely killed it. Up and down the card. There was a great women's match between Violet and Willow Nightingale, who I was somewhat familiar with. I had heard of her before and saw a couple of her matches, but I wasn't too familiar with her work. And to see her, you know, and Violet also, I mean, they just had a great match. Charles Mason and Smiley, and I know some of you maybe had never heard of Charles Mason before, maybe until you saw the GCW pay-per-view a few weeks ago. He was in the Battle Royal, dressed up in the suit. He was one of the last people in that Battle Royal. Charles Mason is fantastic, and he was in there with Smiley, who has been a staple in House of Glory for many, many years, former House of Glory world champion. Those two had a great match, and that was even before Private Party, Rich Swann, and Willie Mack hit the ring for theirs. And I already mentioned earlier what I thought of that match. Those four were just out of this world. But all this Forbidden Door talk, you know, we had two AEW stars against two Impact Wrestling stars in a House of Glory ring. We also had the hog return of Switchblade Jay White. The same week that he made his first appearance on AEW television, he returned to House of Glory. The last time he was there was nearly 5 years ago. Against the same man that he stepped into the ring with last night, Cashflow Ken Broadway, who had a bone to pick with me. I'm such a nice guy. I mean, who could possibly take issue with me? But he had an issue with me after something I said on the stream the other night. All I said was I was happy that I was going to get the chance to call my very first Switchblade match on commentary. And he thought that I was counting him out. He thought that I was, you know, basically ignoring him. And it's like I said on the stream on Friday night, you know, Broadway had to start worrying a little less about me and a little more about the man who once headlined the Tokyo Dome and Madison Square Garden for New Japan. And he did just that. You know, Broadway went in there and he took the fight to Jay White. That was another great match on the show last night. Unfortunately, Alex Shelley had to pull out at the last minute and his crown jewel title match against Low Ki. But we had a more than suitable replacement in former Ring of Honor world champion and current AEW star Jay Lethal. So kudos to everybody involved last night. I was proud to be even a small part of it. And the big announcement that next month, Friday night, March the 11th, House of Glory Salvation, with a first-time ever main event, the Lucha Brothers, Penta and Rey Fénix, back from that gruesome elbow dislocation. Thankfully, nothing was broken. And so he's ready to come back. The Lucha Bros take on the Briscoes, Jay and Mark, in the main event. That match is going to be absolutely insane. And JD from New York and I have the pleasure of calling that main event. I cannot wait. HOGWrestling.net. For tickets. First row is already gone, so don't sleep on this because you're going to turn around. There's not going to be any more good tickets left. So HOGWrestling.net. The plans that we have, plans for House of Glory for the next few months, all I'll say is that it is an exciting time, and I hope you can join and be part of it. This was a big week for AEW with Tony Khan promising a top wrestler debuting on Dynamite, and an AEW world title match between Hangman Adam Page and Lance Archer. Tony's strategy to generate a lot of buzz coming into the show worked, at least for 1 week. They bounced back big after last week's rating was down for the show with CM Punk against MJF. 2 weeks ago, they were at 1.1 million viewers on TBS. Last week, they were down to 954,000. This week, they were back up to over 1.1 million, their best ever viewership on TBS and their best overall viewership since September 29th. But he will not be able to push a new debut every week. The question is, with all this talent that they do have, if they can keep that number above a million. The key, as with everything, is in the follow-up. I mean, look at that roster and all the names they have, all the talent they have. There's really no reason that they shouldn't be able to do that. Keith Lee made his AEW debut against Isaiah Cassidy of Private Party. He was the mystery man who was slotted in there. This was a qualifying match for the Face of the Revolution ladder match coming up on pay-per-view next month. And look, before I even talk about Keith Lee here, gotta give props to Isaiah Cassidy for being the real star of that match. You know, Keith Lee came down, he posed, he threw him around a little bit, he won the match. You know, obviously he's the big name here of the two, but Cassidy was, I mean, really both members of Private Party. I can't even say it was just Isaiah. It was Isaiah, it was Mark Quinn, bumping around like madmen for Keith Lee, making him look like a million bucks out there. So kudos to Private Party, who I don't think got enough credit. Everybody was talking about Keith Lee. They should have been talking about Isaiah Cassidy in Private Party. But Keith Lee debuted, and he qualified for the ladder match next month at Revolution. This was one of the two names I mentioned. Of all these ex-WWE names whose non-competes recently ran out and expired, I named two people who I thought for sure would end up in AEW. Because there's some names I'm just not sure of. Now, Jeff Hardy is not free yet. And Jeff Hardy is going to AEW. There's not a doubt in my mind. Jeff Hardy, next month, will be in AEW. And the Hardy Boys will be doing a reunion in AEW. There's zero doubt. But of the other names, Keith Lee was the one I mentioned on the men's side. And on the women's side, I mentioned Ember Moon, who I believe just the other night, I think went to a 30-minute draw at an independent show against Thunder Rosa as her former moniker of Athena. She is now free. I think it's only a matter of time before she ends up in the AEW women's division. I think she'll be a fine addition to that division. But Keith Lee is the one who I said for sure I see him ending up in AEW. Keith Lee is someone who should be cannot miss. He is the kind of person who, you know, you look at him, you look at the athletic ability that he has as a bigger guy. Guy's 340 pounds. I mean, he's no small man. And he can do things in that ring that a man of his size should not be able to do. And I think that there is a way for Keith Lee to go out there and be presented as a monster, as this agile monster, and for him to go on to become one of the top talents, one of the upper echelon talents in this company. I feel the same way about Malakai Black. Now, Malakai is doing the tag team thing for now with Brody King. But I, even when they brought Brody King in, I said, I hope that doesn't mean the end of Malakai Black doing singles work, because he was on a pretty good path. I think he's better than just being in a tag team. But he's another one who I have high hopes for. These are guys that, you know, a year from now, when I'm sitting here doing this show, I should be talking about them, if not as a champion, in the conversation as somebody who is either TNT champion or wrestling for the AEW World Championship. Because that's where they should be. That's where they belong. Now, there was a lot of people who were commenting on Keith Lee, and he was heavier than he was the last time. You know, I think even Meltzer in his newsletter and Keller in his, in The Torch, you know, said that his weight is a lot higher than it was previously, even when he was in NXT. And that's true. I mean, he did look bigger than I've ever seen him before. And I don't know how much of that is just, you know, him still trying to get back in ring shape because he went through hell with COVID. He's talked about this before. When he came back to WWE late last year, it's not like he was getting a lot of work in. You know, he had a few TV matches, but he wasn't really working a whole hell of a lot before they fired him. And now he's been sitting around waiting for his non-compete to expire. He went and got married to Mia Yim. So I don't know how much work he's actually done, to be perfectly honest with you, since he was cleared late last year to come back. Before WWE even came up with the Bearcat stuff, you know, they were trying to first figure out what to do with him. He was sitting at home. And so how are you supposed to get yourself back in ring shape and get your cardio up in the ring if you're not really working all that much? This is going to be a real test now for Keith Lee. You know, to see if he can kind of get back to the NXT Keith Lee. We'll see. All I know is that even though he was, you know, bigger than I last saw him, he was still moving around pretty good in that ring on Wednesday night. And the fans were happy to see him. Keith Lee is somebody who should absolutely be a top name in this company in short order. And we'll see, because it's a very crowded roster right now in AEW. You know, the opportunities, I don't want to say they're few and far between. I think everybody will have an opportunity, but you know, there's only so many spots to go around. We'll see if Keith Lee ends up in a spot high up on the roster where I think that he should be. I don't see him winning that ladder match, that Revolution. But that's the kind of match that he could go into and be part of, and he doesn't have to get pinned to lose. You know, all you have to do is pull down the contract or the briefcase or whatever is hanging above the ring. But I'm very happy to see him land in AEW. And hopefully now his talents will be recognized and not ignored. And there's no silly nickname needed. There's no skirt. There's no, I mean, all the bullshit. Trying to figure out, what do we do with this guy? It's not that hard. With a guy like him who looks like that, it should not be complicated to figure out how to utilize someone like Keith Lee. We'll see if Tony Khan can pick up the pieces and do with him what Vince McMahon did not. I can't even say could not. He could have. He chose not to. We'll see if AEW can pick up the pieces and actually do something worthwhile with Keith Lee. Because outside of that one win on pay-per-view early on against Randy Orton, once he got called up to the main roster, after the Randy Orton win, I can't think of a single fucking thing of note that this guy did. Even before he got sick. Switchblade Jay White. He showed up for the very first time on Dynamite in a backstage segment, which I thought was kind of a lame way for him to debut. But it's a great get for them. And we come to find out that Switchblade was not even supposed to come into AEW. When Tony Khan went and tweeted the Friday before this week's show, so this was after last week's Rampage, he went online, he had promised some big announcement. And the announcement was that he would have an announcement on Wednesday. And he didn't really have an announcement on Wednesday. It was just a debut. So I think he kind of even phrased that wrong. But he admitted that in those tweets that he put out when he was talking about the Forbidden Door, and he said this person who was going to debut against Isaiah Cassidy and the Forbidden Door person are one in the same. That's what he said. He said it was one in the same, which made you think, okay, it's only one person debuting, not two. But it didn't make any sense. You hear about Forbidden Door, you think of people who work actively for other companies coming in. You think of companies working together, talent exchanges between two companies. Somebody who was fired from WWE signing with AEW has nothing to do with the Forbidden Door. What's so forbidden about it? The guy's a free agent. Well, Tony Khan realized after the fact that he fucked up. And he tweeted after Jay White debuted, he said, "I did not secure Jay White until Sunday. I realized after the fact that Friday night I butchered my own definition of Forbidden Door in hyping tonight. I heard the fans' feedback and I wanted to ensure that tonight was a special Dynamite for all." So he admits, I fucked up. He said he screwed up the meaning of the whole Forbidden Door thing. And he and I love this, like he realizes, okay, he fucked up. And so what does he do? He goes out and he grabs one of the biggest names from New Japan, who's also been working for Impact. And he brings him in on short notice. So, you know, good on him. You know, he recognized that he made a mistake. He wanted to do something cool for the fans. He went out and he got Jay White. I think that's great. Now, I don't know how many appearances he's in for. I suspect it's not too many. I mean, they brought in Kenta. They brought in Minoru Suzuki when he was on tour here in the U.S. They only had them for a handful of appearances. And again, Tony Khan only grabbed him at the last second because he screwed up. So it's not like he had existing plans for Jay White. He had this whole 6-month plan mapped out for Jay White. This was a last minute thing. But even if only for a couple of matches, I think it's great that they got him. He's facing Trent Barreto, one-on-one this Friday on Rampage. That's going to be his in-ring debut for AEW. A little programming note, Rampage is on earlier. It's actually going to be on before SmackDown this Friday, not after SmackDown. So usually it's a 10 p.m. start on TNT this Friday. For those who watch Rampage, just be aware, because of the whole NBA All-Star Weekend thing, it's a 7 o'clock start. So you've got the taped Rampage leading into a taped episode of SmackDown this week. There was a promo segment on Dynamite with the Inner Circle. Chris Jericho had called for a team meeting, a mandatory team meeting of all the members of the Inner Circle. The Inner Circle is fracturing at the seams, thank God. And I want to single out Santana and Ortiz, and in particular, Santana, because he came out and cut the promo of his life on Chris Jericho. And there was a lot of truth in what was coming out of his mouth on Wednesday night. And those are some of the best promos, the ones that, and that's why people talk about the fucking pipe bomb after all these years. Yes, it was a work promo, but it was a work shoot because there was a lot of genuine emotion in that promo from CM Punk. He was genuinely frustrated at his position in the company. He was genuinely frustrated at The Rock coming in and getting the WrestleMania main event when he felt that he should have been in the WrestleMania main event. And he should be the one on all the posters and stuff. So he took all of that and turned it into promo gold. Those were some of the best ones. I heard a lot of truth in what Santana was saying on Wednesday night when he was talking about Chris Jericho and the Inner Circle holding them back and how they should have already been competing for and winning the tag team titles and doing more than what they're doing. And all this has done is hurt their careers. I've been saying this for months, that this Inner Circle thing went on for too long and it started working against all of these guys. Sammy's doing well on his own. He doesn't even need the group anymore. I'm not even sure why he's still part of the group anymore. But I love that promo, and now it leads to a tag team match this Wednesday. It's going to be Chris Jericho and Jake Hager taking on Santana and Ortiz. Jericho came off very heelish on Wednesday, and I'm hopeful that it will lead to a heel turn for him. You know, he was a heel, then he was a babyface, and I think it's about time to shake things up again. But when he had that, he got that line off about, you know, when Santana and Ortiz a few weeks ago refused to tag him into their match, all you did was deprive these poor people. You should be apologizing to the fans. He sounds like fucking Bully Ray now. You should be apologizing to the fans for cheating them out of seeing Chris Jericho wrestling in the ring. Oh, yeah. So anyway, I'm hopeful that this is the beginning of the end of the Inner Circle and the start of something more, you know, a tag team title run. Run to the titles to Santana and Ortiz that they can build up now over a period of months. There was an excellent tag team match. CM Punk got John Moxley to be his partner against FTR. With the win, Punk now has earned a rematch against MJF. When and where he wants it to be, whatever stipulation he wants it to be, I'm sure it will be at Revolution. I think we knew they were going to rematch at Revolution. It seemed pretty obvious to me. But that tag team match on Wednesday night was great. If you're a fan of tag team wrestling, make sure you go back and watch that match if you didn't tune in for it. And Hangman Page, what can I say about the main event? Hangman Page retaining his title over Lance Archer. I thought just an excellent Texas death match they had. You know, yes, it was a garbage match. That's what the Texas death match is, basically. You can pretty much use whatever you want and do whatever you want. There's almost no rules in a match like that. So you're going to get violence and blood and weapons and broken tables and all sorts of stuff. Both men bled. I thought that that match was fantastic, and I love the finish. It was very clever having Dan Lambert remove the top rope so that Hangman couldn't hit his finish. And then he had to find a different way to hit the buckshot to win the match. So the referee at the end, he's bent over, trying to pick up some barbed wire on the ground, and Hangman uses him as a vault to vault himself over into the buckshot lariat, off the apron, down through a table. I thought that finish was very well done. So a great title defense for Hangman, who I know it kind of feels like, you know, is Hangman having this exciting run as champion? First of all, he's had barely a month. He's had 5 weeks with that championship. They have not had a single pay-per-view event since he won that title on January 5th. So let's not count this guy out just yet. He barely has had the belt. What I've seen of him in these matches on TV against Danielson and now against Archer has been excellent. And now he's going to be challenging Adam Cole, it looks like. Something that I've been pitching and talking about now for weeks. That Adam Cole should be the one to get Hangman in the main event at Revolution. So all that talk about him being buried and him being written off after the loss to Orange Cassidy, all I do, I just sit here and laugh at those people who looked at that as some kind of burial. The guy's going to go in there in a few weeks and have this fucking kick-ass match, whether he wins or loses. Wrestling for the championship. They're going to have, you know, people are going to be standing up, giving these guys a standing ovation. I have no doubt they're going to go in there and have a fantastic match. And very few people are going to remember the fucking falling off the tunnel through a cardboard stage against Orange Cassidy. Now, one last note on AEW here. And this concerns Kyle O'Reilly, who has been taking some time off after the birth of his daughter. He should be back on TV shortly. I've mentioned the name Steve Mello on the show before. He has become a good friend. He handles all the graphics work that you see on my YouTube channel. He just does an amazing job. And one of his children, his son Taden, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes late last year. Which is a scary diagnosis. I mean, any kind of diabetes diagnosis, let alone for a child, is very scary. And Steve mentioned that to his son, the fact that Kyle O'Reilly, who they were sitting around one day watching on TV, he mentioned the fact that Kyle also has type 1 diabetes. He's been very public about that. And Steve said that his son thought that was really cool, because he was having a bad day, and so he mentioned that. He said, well, you know, Kyle also has what you have, and he just thought that was, not that he was happy Kyle also has diabetes, but you know what I mean. He thought it was really cool that this guy he's watching on TV is out there kicking ass and doing his thing, and he has the same thing that he has. So anyway, a little while later, Steve ends up emailing Kyle to tell him that story and to congratulate him on the birth of his daughter. Fast forward a few weeks, and Kyle responded back to him to thank him for the message, and he asked for his address so that he could send Taden an autograph. Well, on Friday, the autograph arrived with a card and a very nice message inside for Taden. And, you know, we hear about stories from a lot of wrestlers that go out of their way to do nice things for kids, whether it's, you know, WWE or AEW or another promotion. They don't always get the attention they deserve. And they don't really do it for the attention. But I asked him if I could just share that story here so I could tell you all that Kyle O'Reilly is a class act. It was very nice of him to do that. Raw last Monday aired on Sci-Fi due to the Winter Olympics, commercial-free for the first hour. They redeemed themselves with the academic challenge stuff after that lame scooter race stuff the week before. RK-Bro and the Alpha Academy squared off in a quiz bowl, answering questions from different categories, everything from U.S. presidents to cartoons to sports to pop culture. There was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles question in there about which turtle uses nunchucks as his weapon of choice. I mean, everybody has to know that's Michelangelo, right? I would think. I don't know if the turtles are as big now as they were when I was a kid, but I was proud of the people of Denver. They were shouting the answer out like they knew exactly what it was. Orton and Riddle winning the competition, you know, was predictable, but this was a lot of fun. I enjoyed this. Randy Orton is at that stage of his career now where he can do no wrong in the eyes of the fans. You can tell, he's out there having fun with it. Gable has been killing it every week. He's found his groove with this gimmick. They devoted the first 20 minutes of Raw to a game show. But it was well done, and everybody had fun with this. When Bob Barker was the guest host for Monday Night Raw, and they opened the show, also 15, 20 minutes of a game show. And that was a lot of fun. You know, when they hit, they hit. Sometimes they try to hit and they miss. I thought this was a hit. There was no Brock Lesnar on this show. He is back tomorrow night. But MVP was there to introduce Bobby Lashley in his hometown of Denver. He got the hometown welcome. Funniest line was Lashley saying that he was going to pin Brock Lesnar again at Elimination Chamber. That was high comedy right there. That's what you call it when you're in Denver. High comedy. And he said that he'll be defending the WWE title in the main event of WrestleMania. Lashley defended the WWE title last year and wasn't the main event of WrestleMania. And so if by chance he holds onto that belt, which he won't, he still won't be in the main event of WrestleMania. But it's nice to have goals. We got a couple of new Alexa Bliss therapy segments. Tony Soprano talking to Dr. Melfi, these are not. He thought that they were making progress until she told him that she went off on some evil creature of a woman who cut in front of her in line at the grocery store. And when the doctor asked her to describe what this woman looked like, she described something that sounded an awful lot like Lily the doll. So they clearly have more work to do. They did announce a women's Elimination Chamber match for next weekend, with the winner earning a Raw Women's Championship match at WrestleMania. It's going to be Liv Morgan, Rhea Ripley, Nikki A.S.H., Doudrop, Bianca Belair, and one last participant to be determined. I don't think it's Alexa Bliss. I think it ends up being Asuka. You know, Bianca still wins and gets Becky Lynch at WrestleMania. But if Asuka is in there, they can set up her first feud with Rhea Ripley. You know, they wrestled for the title of WrestleMania last year. Rhea went over. I would love to see them run it back this year and give them both a proper singles match. So that's what I would shoot for if it were me. And I don't know if they're going to announce the final entrant tomorrow night, if they're going to hold off until the pay-per-view. I don't know what their plans are as far as making that announcement, if they're going to save it as a surprise or not. My guess, though, would be Asuka. Now, they didn't give the women any qualifiers for the chamber the way they did with the men, probably because they don't have enough women on the roster to do qualifying matches. So what they ended up doing was very stupid. They had Bianca Belair beating Nikki A.S.H., and they had Doudrop beating Liv Morgan, which only serves to make Nikki and Liv look completely weak and ineffective going into the chamber. They should be building up these people in the chamber. They shouldn't be building up two of them or three of them and then fucking making the other ones look like, you know, jabrones out there. It just begs the question, why are they even in the chamber in the first place? Except I already know the answer to that question because I just told you. I just told you why. They don't have enough women. They don't want to beat Carmella or Zelina Vega because they're tag team champions right now. And Tamina is too busy chasing after Dana Brooke and the ugly green belt. And I don't want Tamina in the Elimination Chamber anyway. By the way, those 24/7 chase segments continue to be the absolute worst thing on any WWE show. It's like they're a version of Microsoft Word, like a Microsoft Word template that they just reuse over and over and over again, like plug and play. That's all it is. There's nothing creative about these segments. They gave up on these segments so long ago, and I cannot believe they are still doing them. And they never change. It's the same shit every single week. I mean, to see Akira Tozawa out there, still dressed up after all this time. How long has it been? It feels like 2 years now. Still dressed up like a ninja, doing the same stupid shit every single week, is just depressing. AJ Styles beat Damian Priest in a non-title match. Yet another loss for the United States champion, which has to be the start of a heel turn. Has to be. They had a pretty sweet finishing sequence where AJ was out on the apron. Priest went to go hit the ropes, and when he came off, AJ nailed him just perfectly with a phenomenal forearm for the win. It wasn't as good as Ricky Starks countering the lethal injection into the Rochambeau on Rampage, but it was the second best finish I saw last week on TV. But Kevin Owens also pinned Damian Priest on TV the week before that, and there was no mention of him being in line for a U.S. title match or even caring enough to want one. You know, there are better ways to turn your United States champion heel, if that's what they're doing, than by beating him over and over and over again. Right? Go back to Damian Priest in his NXT days when he was celebrating big wins by jumping in the hot tub with a bunch of hot women. He was a playboy. It wouldn't be hard to believe. Let's say he's winning so much that he starts to get full of himself. It starts to go to his head. Starts rubbing people the wrong way. He's on a roll. And then maybe he loses one match. And it's a total fluke win, but he loses once. And it sets him off. Instead, he just feels completely cold right now. This guy is stone cold. And I don't mean Steve Austin. He wishes he could be Steve Austin. Everybody wishes they could be at the level of Steve Austin. He's the opposite of that. This guy is cold as a block of ice. And I said a few weeks ago, since they tweaked his character where he gets blackout mad, he's less over than he was before. That is a fact. But AJ Styles, unlike Kevin Owens, AJ Styles is getting a United States Championship match tomorrow night. So at least somebody is getting a title match out of things. At least they're not having everybody beat this guy and then just pretend like they don't give a shit about the U.S. title. Kevin Owens and Austin Theory squared off once again, this time with Owens getting the decisive win. They had another good outing, and Owens was hopeful that meant that he would be taking Theory's spot in the chamber, but Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville threw cold water on that idea. Lita was back on the show, and I thought her segment with Becky Lynch did a good job of playing off their history to give their match at Elimination Chamber a story. Becky said that before she accepted Lita's challenge, she declined, and she wanted to explain why. She said it was nice to hear her teenage idol say nice things about her, and when people turned their noses at her when she got to WWE, Lita was not one of those people. And she's grateful to her for that. There would be no Becky Lynch without Lita. But now that there is a Becky Lynch, there should be no Lita. The title is the most important thing to her. Finally, a champion who actually talks about how important the title is to them. She said that she would have no problem putting Lita down if she has to. Lita said that she hasn't had a title shot in 15 years. But the fans still support her and she likes her odds. And Becky attacked her. Lita made her own comeback, hit a twist of fate and a moonsault. They have to make it feel like Lita has a chance. Lita has no chance. But they have to at least convince you to feel like, okay, this woman is a legend. She's a Hall of Famer. Even though it's been 15 years since she's been champion, she has a shot. She has a fighting chance. We know that she doesn't. You know who else has no shot with Becky Lynch? Ric Flair. This is as good a place as any to bring this up. Becky Lynch continues to live rent-free in Ric Flair's head. Again, on his podcast, as he apparently has been doing regularly from what I understand, he criticized Becky Lynch, this time for calling Ronda Rousey Ronnie during their promo a few weeks ago. He said, "Once again, she's not Ronnie, she's Ronda Rousey, and anybody who's stupid enough to call her Ronnie and make a joke of her presence, what she brings to the company, is out of their mind. AKA, What is her name now? Big Time Bex? How about thank you, Rhonda, for showing up because I'm not the man anymore. I'm generic. Who am I? Big Time Bex? The Last Kicker? I don't know. I almost hope that he's doing this like in kayfabe, but I know he's not. Like, I know Mark Madden is not on that podcast talking to him and asking him questions in kayfabe. So, you know, when you hear stuff like this and he's criticizing her for calling her Ronnie instead of, you know, again, it's in the context of a wrestling promo, so he just sounds like a fucking idiot talking like this. But I give Becky a lot of credit because she could go after him and she could torch him if she wants to, but she goes a different way with it. She's more subtle with her clapback. She responded on Twitter. She said, "Work so hard that your heroes become your rivals and then become so good that Ric Flair loses his mind every time you breathe." That is a shoot. That's exactly what happens. I wonder if Flair had an issue with Rhonda a few weeks ago going out there and calling her Rebecca over and over again. Didn't see anything from these transcripts about him mentioning that. This is beyond embarrassing at this point. His obsession with this woman. No matter how hard he tries, she's not going to ride Space Mountain. That ride has been out of order for a while now. He needs to let this one go and move on. There's plenty of other fish in the sea. Although maybe not at his age. Maybe those fish are on their last breaths, but, you know, nonetheless. I mean, this is just pathetic at this point. They went with their tried and true formula for the main event of ending the singles match and turning it into a tag team match when they could have just booked the tag team match to begin with, but what do I know? Seth Rollins and Matt Riddle ended by DQ when Kevin Owens interfered. He attacked Riddle. And it turned into Rollins and Owens against Riddle and Orton. And Rollins, and here's why this is even goofier. Rollins ended up pinning Riddle with a stomp to win the match anyway. So why even turn it into a tag team match in the first place? If the two people who were in the original match were going to be part of the finish regardless. But we may have gotten a clue on that afterwards when Orton gave Owens an RKO and Rollins, supposedly KO's best friend, laughed about it in the aisle. He didn't seem too concerned that his buddy got laid out by Randy Orton. Although you could have done that finish without turning it into a tag team match. I mean, you could have just had Kevin Owens in his corner or something, but I'm sure that'll come up on the show tomorrow night. I'm sure Owens will not be very happy about that. A very dull episode of Raw. They're on Sci-Fi one more time tomorrow night, but Brock Lesnar is back, so maybe it'll feel a little bit more eventful than this episode did. It is the final Raw before Elimination Chamber. Now, over on SmackDown, very good main event between Charlotte Flair and Naomi for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Those two ladies went out there. They killed it on Friday night. They had people buying into those near falls like they thought Naomi was walking out of there with the title. And that's not an easy thing to do. Because logically, you should look at where we are here this close to WrestleMania and you should know that Naomi and nobody else is taking that title away from Charlotte before she steps in the ring with Ronda Rousey. But when you can make people forget, when the match is so good and the near falls are so good that you can make people forget, even for a split second, that's right. That's the sign of a great match right there. And those two women went out there and had a great match on Friday night. So kudos to both of them for it. And Naomi, you know, she doesn't get the kind of opportunities that Charlotte does. Not too many women, regardless of who they are, get the kind of opportunities that Charlotte does because, you know, of who she is and how long she's been around for and the way they've always positioned her as the greatest of all time and everything. But Naomi went out there and she made the most of the opportunity that she was given. And it's clear to me that they are going to extend this out until WrestleMania. And I think, I mean, look, if they don't put Naomi in a singles match at WrestleMania, then, I mean, these people are fucking morons. Because it may not be a championship match, but for as long as this thing has carried on with Sonya Deville, if it's still going on, and here we are in the middle of February, at this point, you build to WrestleMania, you do the singles match between her and Sonya, You could add the stipulation that Sonya, if she doesn't win that match, she's out of a position of authority. She's no longer, I mean, I can't even call her the GM, whatever the hell you call her. And she just goes back to being a wrestler. That's the ultimate revenge that Naomi could get, is to eliminate Sonya in a position of authority in this company. That would seem to be the logical destination for this. But you give Naomi a singles match. Don't put her in a battle royal. Don't put her in some multi-woman match. You've dragged this thing out for this long. The people want to see this woman succeed. They like her. They want to see her do well. I think it would get a great reaction after all these months if you go to WrestleMania and she's the one to put down Sonya Deville. That has to be the final destination for this feud, and it has to be a singles match on one of the two nights of WrestleMania. You've got two nights. There's no reason not to do that match. Los Lotharios, they beat the New Day. This was a rematch from the week before when the New Day beat them. That was a very good match. This match was good, not as good, but it was still a pretty good match. And so now they need to do a rubber match. And I don't mind seeing them square off for a third time because the first two were really good. The rest of the show was a complete waste of time. I'm not even going to get into it. I mean, if you want the full recap, it's up on YouTube. I pushed the audio out already. I'm not getting into everything else that happened on that show. What I will get into briefly here, though, is the SmackDown that was taped immediately after the show, went off the air on Friday night. So if you do not want to know any spoilers about this week's episode of SmackDown, which was taped ahead of time because they're going to have to be traveling out to Saudi Arabia on Friday, then this is your warning. Skip ahead by a couple of minutes here because I'm going to get into some spoilers here. Sami Zayn has been waiting quite a while to get his Intercontinental Championship match against Shinsuke Nakamura. Nakamura had missed some time. He had a hand injury. He was cleared several weeks ago. And so they did the match on the second taping on Friday night. And we do indeed have a new Intercontinental Champion. In fact, WWE already spoiled that. I don't even know why. I do a better job of protecting these spoilers than they do. They went on their social media and they already spoiled the fact that there was a title change at the tapings on Friday night. Sami Zayn did beat Shinsuke Nakamura, as he should have, as I've been saying he should, because there's no reason to keep that title on Nakamura anymore. They pretty much screwed the pooch on that one. Sami, at least, I enjoy his work. I think he's very entertaining in the role that he's in. He's been getting a lot of television time every week consistently. And so now he has his Intercontinental title back. But they are still teasing something between him and Johnny Knoxville, even though the Royal Rumble has come and gone. The premiere of the new Jackass movie has come and gone. They had a segment on Friday night showing Johnny Knoxville at a store somewhere holding up a Sami Zayn shirt and throwing it into a wood chipper outside. And Zayn was talking about Knoxville in his segment on Friday night. And I did see the speculation from, I think it was Meltzer, who says that he thinks we're headed for an Intercontinental title match at WrestleMania between Sami Zayn and Johnny Knoxville. Now, I know Johnny Knoxville got a lot of high marks from people supposedly behind the scenes who thought he was very professional and very respectful of what they do. And, you know, he didn't go out there and embarrass himself or anything like that. You know, the celebrity involvement can be hit or miss. And Knoxville was fine. You know, he did fine. I don't know that there's a need to continue to extend this out, but it looks like they're going to do that. And it very well may be that he's going to get a championship match at WrestleMania. Now, is that ridiculous for Johnny Knoxville to go out and challenge for the Intercontinental title? It's no more ridiculous than him being in the Royal Rumble match and challenging for the right to go to the main event of WrestleMania. How is this any more ridiculous than that? It's basically the same thing. I mean, look, the Intercontinental title has not been treated in a serious way for quite some time. I look at it a little bit differently. I accept the Intercontinental title. It is what it is. It isn't what it used to be. And under this regime, it never will be because they don't give a shit. I look at this as a plus for Sami Zayn. I know some people are going to think I'm just ridiculous for even saying that. But look, Sami just re-signed with the company. Sami has said he re-signed because he's very happy in the current role that he is in on TV. They trust him more on promos. He's getting a lot of television time. And he's going to be in a prominent position at WrestleMania if he is defending his title against a celebrity. He gets a match on the WrestleMania card. That's not the case every year. So I think for him to go in there on night one or night two, whichever night it is, and have a somewhat high-profile match on the card, a title match, regardless of who it's against, is not a bad place for Sami Zayn to be. Unless, of course, Johnny Knoxville actually wins the Intercontinental title. Now, that would be fucking ridiculous. I don't see that happening, but yeah, it does look like we may be headed in that direction. I mean, nothing is confirmed yet. But look, it just goes to show you the level of trust that they have in Sami Zayn. You look at what he was doing on the WrestleMania card last year when he worked Kevin Owens. He was working a program with Logan Paul. He worked with Logan Paul at WrestleMania last year. And now this year, he might work with Johnny Knoxville. There's a certain level of trust they have to have in you, I think, to put you in these positions with these celebrities they bring in. And I think it speaks highly of what they think of Sammy. I know it might not seem that way because of who they're putting him in the ring with. He's going to have to fucking sell for Johnny Knoxville, who isn't a wrestler. But for Sami Zayn, it's really not a bad place for him to be. And I have just learned to accept that they don't look at the Intercontinental Championship in the way that it used to be featured and positioned on the show. It is sad, but I don't see this as being any more ridiculous than having him in the Royal Rumble match. Because in theory, if he would have won the Royal Rumble match, he would be wrestling Roman Reigns or Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Now that would be ridiculous. There was also a segment at the tapings. They did a contract signing for a match that has been added to the Elimination Chamber card. It will be Ronda Rousey and Naomi teaming up to take on Charlotte Flair and Sonya Deville. So they had a contract signing, and I saw the same video clips on Twitter that I know a lot of you have probably seen. And if you haven't seen it, boy, you have to go take a look at this. It's only about 4 or 5 seconds long. But there was a moment in this contract signing where Ronda Rousey was to have grabbed Charlotte, reached over the table and grabbed Charlotte by the hair and slam her face down into the table. And that's what Ronda did, but there was obviously a miscue here. Because the way that Charlotte sold this looked completely ridiculous. I mean, this looked awful. Charlotte did not make Ronda look good at all with this move. And I would like to just chalk it up to a mistimed spot. I would like to chalk it up to just a simple, you know, a simple botch. And Charlotte doesn't want to go out there and make her segments look this terrible. But boy, did this not look good. Good luck to them. They're going to have to get creative with how they air this on the show on Friday night. Hopefully not a sign of how their match at WrestleMania is going to go. But Elimination Chamber is this Saturday in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, airing at noon Eastern on Peacock. I will be live on YouTube with the review as soon as the show is over. So you get two podcasts next weekend, one on Saturday afternoon and then the usual show on Sunday. That'll be episode 744. The last Saudi show they did, Crown Jewel, back in October, was quality-wise, top to bottom, the best Saudi Arabia show of all the shows that they have done so far. And a friend of the show, Fawaz, got his sound-off sign on camera the last time. He says he's got even better seats this time, so keep an eye out. If you spot it, screenshot it for me. I've got fans all over the world. You never know where you might see a sound-off sign pop up. Or maybe a giant Solomonster head. I haven't seen one of those yet. I'm just saying. I'm just putting it out there into the universe. We have Drew McIntyre against Madcap Moss. Falls count anywhere. You know, it's Drew McIntyre against Madcap Moss. What more is there to really say? We've already seen the match. They did McIntyre and Moss at day one, and McIntyre beat him. So now they're running a match back again that nobody gives a shit about. Obviously, it'll be a win for Drew McIntyre. The Usos defend the SmackDown Tag Team titles against the Viking Raiders. I am going with the Usos to retain their titles here. Becky Lynch defends the Raw Women's Championship against Lita. And I saw the tweets from all of the WWE employees and all of the WWE talent putting up these pictures or quote tweeting WWE's account showing the billboard in Saudi Arabia that has a picture of Lita and Becky Lynch. And it's the first time that the WWE women have been featured on a billboard in Saudi Arabia. And it's very weird that every single one of these tweets had the exact same verbiage. WWE continues to influence the world. Clearly, the social media directive went out to the entire roster, because at almost the exact same time, they tweeted almost the exact same thing. Some of them added a little something more to the tweet. Every fucking tweet, WWE continues to influence the world. Reminds me of that Seinfeld episode when George is out to lunch, I think, with some of the people he works with, and they want him to take a bite. It might have been like a piece of cake or something. He goes, if you're one of us, you'll take a bite. That's what this is. This is a fucking cult. And by the way, WWE continues to influence the world. What exactly are they really influencing other than their own pockets? I mean, give me a fucking break. This influence the world shit. Becky Lynch against Lita. Becky Lynch is not losing the Raw Women's Championship. She's going to retain. She's going to beat her teenage idol. The Women's Elimination Chamber with the winner challenging for the Raw Women's title at WrestleMania. We have Rhea Ripley against Nikki Ash, against Liv Morgan, against Doudrop, against Bianca Belair, against a mystery final entrant whose silhouette in the graphic definitely does not look like Asuka, but my vote is still with Asuka being the one to get the spot. I think she is about ready to come back. Now, if the graphic is any indication, though, of who this person is, then it's not Asuka, if that's the case. You know, I'm looking at this thing, and in the silhouette, this woman has something around her neck. I don't really know what it is, but it looks more like Bayley to me than it does Asuka, or it could be Bayley more than it looks like Asuka. I don't know if they're waiting until the chamber to announce who it's going to be. We might find out tomorrow night on Raw. Whoever it is, I don't think they're winning. It doesn't matter who it is. If it's Asuka, if it's Bayley, you know, I don't think it's Lacey Evans or someone like that. Whoever it is, I don't think it's going to be them winning. Whoever it is, I think may do something in the match that leads to another match at WrestleMania. But the Raw Women's title match at WrestleMania should be, and I believe will be, Bianca Belair challenging Becky Lynch. So I got Bianca winning the chamber. We have Charlotte and Sonya taking on Ronda Rousey and Naomi. I think that Charlotte Flair and Sonya Deville are going to pick up the win next weekend. I think it'll be Sonya pinning Naomi by nefarious means. And that then leads to a blow-off between the two of them at WrestleMania. Charlotte, Ronda, neither of them have to factor into the finish of this match. You can have Sonya cheat to get a win over Naomi, and that is how you build to the ultimate singles match to blow this fucking thing off once and for all at WrestleMania with Naomi getting the big win. That is how you tell that story. We have Roman Reigns defending the Universal Championship against Boombox Bill. Bill Goldberg cashing in his Goldberg in the Bank in Saudi Arabia. This week's bad take by Bully Ray. That should be the title of a new weekly segment here on the show. This week, he pitched the idea on Busted Open Radio of having Goldberg beat Roman Reigns just to stir things up. Have Bill Goldberg be the person, after 550 some odd days, to finally beat the Tribal Chief and take the Universal Championship, only to then wrestle him in a rematch on SmackDown 6 days later and drop it right back to Roman Reigns. Now, this is not a new concept. We saw this a lot even in the Attitude Era. There were a lot of exciting moments like that where, you know, for example, Steve Austin would be screwed out of a championship at a pay-per-view on a Sunday, and he would win the WWF title back on a Monday. That's how he beat Kane, 24 hours after Kane won the championship at the King of the Ring. There are examples of doing this, and I'm not saying that the idea of trying to shake things up in and of itself is not a good idea. I'm not saying that. But the idea that Bill Goldberg would be the one to end this streak that Roman Reigns is on this close to WrestleMania, just for the sake of stirring things up and then just put the belt right back on Roman Reigns on SmackDown the following Friday. First of all, they'd have to pay him extra for that since he's only got the one match left on his current contract. But he says it's very predictable for Roman to win. So that's why they should do the title change. It may be predictable, but that is a horrendously awful idea. Bully the Clown strikes yet again. But they did sit-down interviews, separate sit-down interviews. Michael Cole interviewing Roman Reigns on Friday night. Michael Cole then interviewing Bill Goldberg on Friday night. They're going to have a face-to-face in the ring this Friday. Again, that's already been taped. The month of February has been very kind to Boombox Bill in the past when it comes to the Universal title specifically. He took the title from Kevin Owens 5 years ago this month. And 2 years ago this month, he killed The Fiend. May he rest in peace. The only acceptable outcome to this match is Roman Reigns retaining the Universal Championship. Period. End of story. And that is what will happen. And in the Elimination Chamber match on the men's side, Bobby Lashley defends the WWE title against Brock Lesnar, AJ Styles, Seth Rollins, Matt Riddle, and Austin Theory. If the idea is winner take all at WrestleMania, then Brock Lesnar gets his belt back. If the idea is not winner take all or a unification at WrestleMania, it is still hard for me to sit here and envision anything other than Brock Lesnar winning this match. It is hard for me to envision Brock Lesnar losing on back-to-back pay-per-views before headlining WrestleMania. I can't see it. So I think it's a foregone conclusion that Brock Lesnar is getting his belt back. That's why I laughed so much when Bobby Lashley was on TV on Monday night saying, I'm going to go to the Elimination Chamber and I'm going to do what I did at the Royal Rumble. I'm going to pin Brock Lesnar again. I can't even fathom such a thing happening. Brock Lesnar is going to win the Elimination Chamber. Brock Lesnar is going to become WWE Champion again. Because it does, all the talk about winner take all for them to then not do it would be kind of strange. And I do believe that the way to go is to just have that one top champion, that one top unified champion. Again, unification is not a word that they've used, so I don't think that's what this would be. You would just end up with one guy with two belts, which I don't necessarily agree with that idea, but they've talked about it so much at this point, how do you not do it? I think Brock Lesnar is going to win the WWE title. And that leaves almost everybody else in the chamber without any obvious program for WrestleMania if that happens. I don't know where Bobby Lashley goes from here if he loses that title. What they do with him at WrestleMania. You know, they were teasing a possible split with MVP before everything went down the way it did at day one when Brock got inserted into the match when Roman got sick. It looked like they may have been going in that direction of a Bobby Lashley babyface turn, which is why I thought we were going to get Bobby Lashley against fucking Omos at WrestleMania. But then Roman got sick and Brock won the belt and everything just went in a completely different direction. I don't know what else you do with Lashley if he's not on that card defending the title against somebody. Seth Rollins could always work with Kevin Owens. I would like to see AJ Styles work with Edge. Doesn't have to be for a title. Austin Theory, I've suggested that he be the one to take the United States title away from Damian Priest, but now it looks like Priest may be going heel soon. And that match doesn't make a whole lot of sense if that happens before WrestleMania. Maybe he loses the title to Austin Theory at WrestleMania, and that's what finally sets him off. But those are your Elimination Chamber predictions. We still have the go-home shows to go with Raw and SmackDown this week. Although I don't see anything happening tomorrow night that would radically change my thoughts on this card. And I'll be live on YouTube as soon as the show goes off the air. I figure it's probably 3 hours, so probably 3:30-ish, or between 3:30 and 4 on Saturday afternoon. I'll be live on YouTube, so come on by and join. We'll have a grand old time, even if you don't watch the Saudi shows. Come watch my show instead. I got you covered. I thought NXT this week did a good job of setting the table for Vengeance Day this Tuesday. They are on Sci-Fi again this week. It's going to be an uphill battle audience-wise for them. They did their lowest rating ever for an NXT show this past Tuesday. Just 400,000 viewers due entirely to the fact that the show aired on a different network. So anybody making too much fuss about this is kidding themselves. The reason the number was that bad is because they were on Sci-Fi and they were not on USA. And it'll probably be more of the same this week. And this week is a big show. I'm not sure why they couldn't just push it back 7 days once they realized that they were going to be on Sci-Fi this week. Just do Vengeance Day a week later. You know, but I guess they have like the heart in the logo and everything, and they're trying to play off Valentine's Day, and so maybe they felt they had to do it this week. I still think you could have pushed it back. But I will say about this week's ratings, even though I would take the rating and throw it away, but before I throw it away, I would look at the rating and my brow would be raised, because this show on Tuesday, even on a different network, this show on Tuesday only did 7,000 female viewers age 18 to 34. And think of the kind of audience that this show is geared towards now. All the sex stuff, and they're doing more stuff with relationships, you know, soap opera type stuff. I mean, they're trying hard to appeal, clearly, to a younger demographic. That's what they're aiming for. They did 7,000 female viewers aged 18 to 34. 7,000. I had to do a double take when I saw that to make sure I didn't read it wrong. I really like the opening match, though, on Tuesday between the Creed brothers and the grizzled young veterans who were back to being serious, and they wrestled like it. No comedy from them this week. This was a semifinal match in the Dusty Classic. It was a great match. The Creeds were treated as the baby faces in this match by the crowd. They were going nuts for them at the end of this thing, and they worked like it, too. They worked like baby faces. They pick up the win. They advance to the finals where they will meet MSK. Back in the finals for the second straight year, we had two heel teams in the other match. Here we had two babyface teams. They beat Idris Enofey and Malik Blade, who have played the role of underdog up to this point. Both teams looked good, but there was little doubt as to who was moving on. Really, going back to the Shaman segments with Matt Riddle, MSK going back to the finals was always going to be the destination, and now we're back to babyface against heel. In what should be a kick-ass final this Tuesday, I think that match is going to be bonkers. Tiffany Stratton got a measure of revenge with a win over Wendy Chu. This after Chu stole her credit card last week and went on a shopping spree. And when Chu showed up at the building with all the stuff that she bought, all the crap that she bought and paid for, she said, "Well, too bad the card was canceled," and she threw it away. That is a felony that she admitted to on camera. But in the WWE universe, it's all just fun and games. You know, if Stratton really wanted to get back at her, she would have had that woman arrested and filed a police report. Pete Dunne beat Draco Anthony, who is another student from Booker T's Reality of Wrestling promotion that got signed last year. I mentioned during my Dynamite review that AQA, who wrestled Jade Cargill on Wednesday, and she now has been signed. She's now All Elite. She was the former Zeta Ramir, who had a few matches in NXT. She also comes from Reality of Wrestling. But they shot an angle in the back for social media last week where Joe Gacy and Harlan, they approached Draco. And during his match here, they were watching him. So while they were teasing that story, maybe they're trying to recruit him, you know, I don't know. We had Tony D'Angelo coming out to attack Pete Dunne. But it backfired and Dunne picked up the win anyway. So we had a couple of different stories going on here. After the match, Dunne said that their steel cage match at Vengeance Day should be a weaponized cage match, with weapons being hung from the sides of the cage, and D'Angelo agreed to the stipulation. You know, seeing as how they've been attacking each other for weeks now with crowbars and cricket bats, it makes sense. They already had a crowbar on a pole match, so they may as well hang one on the cage as well. We got to see Songa in action. Grayson Waller's bodyguard, I guess it's Songa and not Sanga, even though it's spelled that way. This was more of an angle to further the issue between LA Knight and Grayson Waller. Songa took the loss. He's big. That's the only thing I can really say about him. There wasn't much to what he did in this match, but when he just stands there behind Grayson Waller, he looks intimidating at least. Songa came sooner than his old tag team partner did. Veer is still coming. He wrestled T-Bar on Main Event, but he still has yet to make a single appearance on Monday Night Raw. Waller is the one who took out a restraining order against LA Knight. last week, saying that he couldn't come within 50 feet of him, and yet there he is at ringside getting involved in the match. And after Knight attacked him, Waller is now claiming that he is going to have LA Knight arrested this Tuesday. I like how they have the power to time their arrests. I assume that's going to end up being the way they get the order lifted, by saying that Waller violated the terms of his own restraining order. Hey, you know what? Since the cops are going to be there on Tuesday, maybe Tiffany Stratton can grab one of them and have them arrest Wendy Chu for credit card fraud. There was a championship summit hosted by Wade Barrett in the ring with Santos Escobar and Bron Breakker ahead of their match at Vengeance Day for the NXT title. WWE has tried to drum up interest in this show by bringing in main roster talent in recent months. We've seen Matt Riddle, we've seen AJ Styles. This week it was Dolph Ziggler. The last time I cared about seeing Dolph Ziggler on Raw or SmackDown, the song Uptown Funk was number one on the Billboard charts. It's been a while. But I am not against Dolph Ziggler wrestling a few matches on NXT, because I think it could do for him what it did for Tyson Kidd all those years ago when he came down from the main roster to wrestle at Full Sail, and Natty came with him. That was a fun period. Ziggler interrupted the summit, kicked his feet up on the table. He had a little back and forth on the mic with Bron Breakker. Ziggler said for all his accomplishments, the one title he has yet to win is the NXT Championship. And the crowd started chanting for a triple threat match. Then Tommaso Ciampa comes out. He starts railing on Ziggler, and the crowd starts chanting Fatal 4-Way. Until Escobar asks, what the hell is going on here? Which was a perfectly valid question to ask, because this was supposed to be about his title match, and it was hijacked by people who have nothing to do with that match. Ciampa hit Ziggler, Legado del Fantasma jumped Bron Breakker, and they powerbombed Breakker through the table in the ring. I like the idea of Dolph Ziggler against Bron Breakker for the NXT Championship. I think he would be a good guy for Breakker to work with, but I am more intrigued by the idea of Dolph Ziggler wrestling Tommaso Ciampa. The problem with all of this is that the focus was on Dolph Ziggler against Bron Breakker and Dolph Ziggler against Tommaso Ciampa when it should have been on Santos Escobar. He felt like an afterthought in all this, and it also telegraphed the finish of their match, I think, at Vengeance Day. If anyone thought Escobar might win the title, now they're left thinking there's no chance because the match they teased was Breakker and Ziggler for the belt. You know, the crowd was chanting it. They could build to a fatal four-way at Stand and Deliver WrestleMania weekend. I was thinking Breakker against Walter, or maybe a rubber match against Ciampa is the direction they were going in for WrestleMania weekend. I think we have to consider the possibility of a fatal four-way on that show for the NXT Championship. If they went through the trouble of changing Walter's name, it may be more likely they see him and Imperium bound for Raw and SmackDown in the next draft. And if that's the case, I mean, do you even put the title on Walter if he's not going to be spending too long in NXT? I'm not as sour on the idea of Dolph Ziggler wrestling or doing a fatal four-way, because I think back to those matches that Tyson Kidd was having. I think back to the four-way that he was part of with Neville, Breeze, and Sami Zayn. Breakker in there with Escobar, Ziggler, and Ciampa could be excellent. Anime Sarray remains undefeated since coming back with a win over Dakota Kai. I have to think or hope that Dakota is just doing the honors for the newer talent on her way out. You know, she's had some dark matches recently. I think she's bound for the main roster, I think. And this is just them using her to put other people over before she makes the move. You know, she is a total lost soul on this show now. And Mandy Rose pinned Kaylee Ray to retain her NXT Women's Championship, but not without some help from Gigi Dolin and JC Jane. Even with the interference, it just felt wrong to see Kaylee Ray, who was so dominant in NXT UK, 649 days as the NXT UK Women's Champion, in there having to tone things down enough for Mandy to keep up with her, and then get pinned by Mandy Rose. Mandy is not the excellence of execution in the ring. Nobody will ever mistake her for that. Outside of the ring, she's a knockout. She plays her part very well. It's all about sex appeal with her. So she doesn't have to be Serena Deeb. She doesn't have to be Sasha Banks. She doesn't have to be Kaylee Ray in the ring. Her entire character is that she got where she is because of how hot she is. And there's a lot of truth in that. It's why Shawn Michaels picked her for this role. But it does show how the division has fallen from where it was even just a couple of years ago. Io Shirai ran out after the match to rescue Kaylee Ray from an attack by Toxic Attraction. And so there's another team right there for the Women's Dusty Classic coming up soon. Here are my Vengeance Day predictions for Tuesday. I am going with Tony D'Angelo over Pete Dunne in the weaponized cage match. Pete Dunne is another one like Dakota Kai who has had a number of dark matches. He's had main event matches, as in on main event. I think he's main roster bound probably after WrestleMania, like I think LA Knight is. So I think they're going to have him put over the new guy. Toxic Attraction defends the NXT Women's Tag Team titles against Indy Hartwell and Persia Parada. I think Gigi and JC retain. They started teasing something on TV with Duke Hudson and Indy Hartwell where it looks like he may be into her. Maybe that somehow plays into the finish if he shows up and he proves to be a distraction of some kind. But I don't see Toxic Attraction losing the belts here. I'm going with Carmelo Hayes to retain his North American championship in what should be a very good match against Cameron Grimes. Hayes is just, he's too good to beat right now. The match I am most looking forward to is the Men's Dusty Classic Final between MSK and the Creed Brothers. I think MSK goes back-to-back. I do. I think they go back-to-back. They get their title match against Eichner and Bartel soon on TV. Diamond Mine gets involved in that title match. That then leads to a triple threat. For the tag team championship at Stand and Deliver, you've got MSK, you've got the Creed Brothers, and you've got Imperium. And what you have there is a potential match of the weekend candidate. Match of the weekend, match of the year. I want to see a three-way with those three teams for the tag team titles. But I think coming out of this, it's going to be MSK getting their match that they have been fighting for and waiting for, all the shaman segments, you know, them trying to work their way back up. So I'm picking MSK. And Bron Breakker will retain his NXT championship over Santos Escobar. I'm hoping this is not the end for Escobar in the world title scene. As I've talked about it before, I kind of like the idea. I've embraced the idea now of a fatal four-way match. Whether it's at Stand and Deliver, or whether they build it up for a big episode in March of NXT. You know, I was looking at Breakker and Walter. I'm not sure they want to take the title off Breakker so soon. And again, I'm just not sure that you want to put the title on Walter if the idea is that he's going to move on up to the main roster. Although, you know, if they come up in the draft is late enough in the year. Even though it really shouldn't be. I mean, the draft should be happening sometime after WrestleMania. But if the draft still happens in October like it's been happening, you know, Walter, at that point, he would have the championship for a while. Just because you get called up, we've seen this with other champions in the past, like Asuka. It doesn't mean they have to be beaten. They could just give the title up. So we could still get there. We could still get to Breakker and Walter, Gunther, whatever the fuck you want to call them. WrestleMania weekend, but that idea of a fatal four-way, once the people in the audience started chanting it, it got me thinking, and I think they need to do that match. Doesn't have to be Stand and Deliver, but I think they have to do that match. Some other news and notes before we get to your mailbag questions. I've got a quick NWA spoiler. If you follow the product and you don't want to know about something that hasn't aired yet, this is your 3-second warning. Matt Cardona pinned Trevor Murdoch to become the new NWA World's Heavyweight Champion last night at the NWA Power Trip tapings, ending Murdoch's reign at 167 days and winning the title for the first time in his career. The match is going to air on NWA Power on YouTube this Tuesday. Cardona is just, he's living his best life right now. He's the NWA World Champion. He's currently the Impact Digital Media Champion. He's the biggest heel in GCW. The guy is everywhere. 10 years ago today, it was the day before Valentine's Day in 2012, is when Kane pushed Zack Ryder off the Raw stage in a wheelchair, pushed him off to his doom. Now he's the NWA champion. WWE is returning to Madison Square Garden for a house show next month, and they are loading the card up coming off their last show in December. They always do the post-Christmas show at MSG. I've been to those shows before. They tend to be a lot of fun. I didn't go to this one, and apparently I wasn't alone. Now, this was during the start of the whole Omicron surge. That didn't seem, though, to affect the other sporting events here in New York. So that excuse really doesn't wash. Vince McMahon had to be embarrassed by that turnout. It was the lowest attended WWE event ever in Madison, or maybe not ever. I don't know if it was ever or one of the lowest attended WWE shows in Madison Square Garden history. It may have been the lowest attended. But if it wasn't the lowest attended, it was pretty close. And Vince McMahon had to be embarrassed in their home market, in their backyard. Had to be embarrassed by that turnout. And so now he is loading things up. You got Brock Lesnar against Bobby Lashley for the WWE title. Roman Reigns defending the Universal title, which he rarely does anymore at live events. Defending against Seth Rollins. Ronda Rousey was just added to the show. They've got around 4,000 tickets out so far. We'll see if they start offering those two-for-one deals like they had to start doing with their UBS Arena debut in Long Island a few months ago. Bryan Danielson was announced this week as the latest inductee into the first class of the Ring of Honor Hall of Fame. This follows the announcement of the Briscoes as the first inductees. Danielson was a must. I mean, he was in the main event of the very first Ring of Honor show. 462 days as Ring of Honor World Champion, legendary matches with Nigel McGuinness, Kenta, Takeshi Morishima. I was there for the Morishima and the Kenta matches. And that match with Kenta, Glory by Honor 5 Night 2, is still one of the best live matches I've ever seen in my life. And I've been to like 8 WrestleManias, 2 Royal Rumbles, tons of Raw, I mean tons of different shows, Impact shows. You know, I was at, I think the only AEW show I was ever at, I guess, was the first Double or Nothing in Vegas, and that was a great show. I've seen some fucking awesome matches, and that remains still right at the top of my list, or near the top of my list, is one of the best matches I've ever seen live. So it's a well-deserved honor. 2 more inductees yet to be announced. They've got plenty of options. CM Punk, Low Key, Samoa Joe. Or they could go with someone like a Kerry Silken or a Gabe Sapolsky if they want someone from behind the scenes who were instrumental in the company. The next inductee will be announced tomorrow, so we won't have to wait very long to find out what the next name is. And finally, we have 2 winners for said tweet this week. First, we give the honors to Road Dogg. Yes, indeed. Road Doggy Dog back in the news. Poor unemployed Road Dogg, who felt the need to quote tweet a message from John Cena, who is always posting these uplifting, positive, inspirational messages on his account. Oh my God, it makes me want to vomit. But the guy is always full of so much positivity on Twitter. His latest one from yesterday was, "Be grateful, not hateful." To which Road Dogg responded, "Go ahead with your rhyming ass." Not even sure what that means. That seemed very petty, and when a fan tweeted at Road Dogg kissing his ass and asking him if John Cena ever thanked him for paving the way for his rapping gimmick, Road Dogg responded and said, "Funny story, it was a perfect setting, we were at a hotel. Hell no, he didn't." I was looking for the smiling emoji. I was hoping that maybe there was some sarcasm in all this, but there was no sarcasm to be found. I'd like to introduce Road Dogg to a little tag team called PG-13 that was rapping on television long before he ever did. Or Oscar from Men on a Mission. Maybe he never saw PN News in WCW. Actually, it's for the best if he never saw PN News in WCW. Maybe John Cena should thank all of them, too. Road Dogg was a grown man pointing at his crotch, telling people to suck it. And he makes it sound like he was Rosa Parks on the back of the bus, blazing some kind of trail. Road Dogg, your first winner for said tweet of the week. The other winner is Mustafa Ali, who is still very much under contract to WWE. After requesting his release, his request was denied. Yesterday, for no apparent reason at all, he tweeted, "I'll see you all in like 2.5 years." This poor bastard. Maybe this could be his new gimmick. Vince McMahon could bring him back on TV, moping around, all depressed, trying all sorts of things to get released. You know, like Wile E. Coyote trying to kill the Roadrunner, but each time his master plan blows up in his face. That could be his new gimmick. Think twice before you sign that contract. If WWE ever puts a contract in front of you, think long and hard before you put your signature on that dotted line. Think what you want out of your career, because you can make a lot of money in WWE. You could become really successful. It could be life-changing money for you in WWE. Think long and hard if that's the only thing that is important to you, if that's what you want. That's the thing I keep coming back to every time I see someone in the same predicament who wants their release, who's unhappy, who can't wait to get back out there and become free and get the shackles off. They make it sound like they're doing a stint in solitary confinement. Think long and hard before you sign your life away. That is the best advice that I could give. Let's take some mailbag questions here before we get out of here. You could email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. And for those who have asked, by the way, I had one person say, I looked for you on Instagram, I couldn't find you. The handle on Instagram is slightly different. On Twitter, as you know, it's @Solomonster. On Instagram, it's @TheSolomonster. So those are the two accounts on Twitter and Instagram that you can follow. Andrew from Birmingham, England. My question is, with Bryan Danielson wanting to start his own faction of upcoming stars he can mentor, would it make sense for him to not only work with Jade Cargill behind the scenes, but also on camera and bring her into that group? Yeah, I didn't mention this earlier, but I did mention it on the stream on Friday. Tony Khan has asked Bryan Danielson to work with Jade Cargill behind the scenes and play the real-life role of mentor for her. And I think that is very smart. I think that's a great idea. To do it on camera, it doesn't really fit the Jade Cargill character. You know, she's very confident. She's talking about, I'm that bitch, and TBS is that bitch, I guess whatever the S stands for. But, you know, it's that bitch title, basically. She's very confident, and I don't know that she needs to be mentored by anybody on camera. It doesn't really work, so... If Danielson and even Moxley, let's say, if they end up putting their own group together, you know, Danielson has mentioned people like Lee Moriarty, who he's wrestling, by the way, this Wednesday. I'm looking forward to that. Moriarty, Daniel Garcia, Wheeler Yuta, people like that, or even a Dante Martin. Would it make sense to have someone who is already successful the way that Jade Cargill is, and doesn't necessarily on camera need to be mentored, but is one of the younger sort of pillars of that company? You could do a group that she's part of, but the idea that she's going to be mentored by him or be taken under his wing on TV, it just doesn't match her character. Behind the scenes, I think it's a great idea. On TV, though, I don't think it really fits. John from Indianapolis has been a listener since he got back into wrestling in 2013. He's got a few questions. I'm going to try to tackle all three of them. I always wanted to see a real match between John Cena and The Undertaker when he was still undefeated at WrestleMania. Is there any reason that never happened? I remember being so excited to see them face off at WrestleMania 34 for it to only end in a few minutes pretty unceremoniously. Yeah, if you ever come up with the answer, I'd love to know. I was pitching that match for years on the podcast. I was pitching for that match before The Undertaker lost the streak to Brock Lesnar. And the moment that Brock Lesnar ended his streak, so too ended my hopes of ever getting that match. Now, we got it eventually. It wasn't even much of a match. It was over in less than 3 minutes. It was a complete waste. The time to do it was when Cena was still being booked strongly and still wrestling full-time on the main roster, and people were sick of it, and they were saying, Super Cena! Even though John Cena, if you really look back, I mean, Cena did jobs for plenty of people. I mean, it was a little ridiculous the way people would make it sound like he was, incapable of losing a match. Not that John Cena did not, in some situations, hold down other people. There are stories and examples of that. But, you know, John Cena, when he was still in Super Cena mode, Undertaker, when he was still undefeated at WrestleMania, you could have bought into the idea that Vince McMahon wanted John Cena to be the one, the chosen one, to hand Undertaker his first loss at WrestleMania. Or if Undertaker, it felt like maybe he was winding down, he was at that point where every year could potentially be the last match of the Undertaker. And if you thought that he was going to go out with a loss to put somebody over, you could buy into the idea that maybe John Cena would be the handpicked one that Vince McMahon would want to beat The Undertaker. And just imagine those near falls in that match. Just imagine him hitting the fucking attitude adjustment and going for the pin. People would be going out of their minds for that near fall. Or if he got him locked in the STF. I mean, we don't see Undertaker submit. Not when he was doing the dead man gimmick anyway. But imagine he's wrenching back on that STF. He's in the middle of the ring. Undertaker's reaching for the ropes. He's almost there, and Cena drags him back to the center of the ring, just like he did with CM Punk when they had that great match of Money in the Bank. The place would be losing their minds. It would have been awesome. And they didn't do it. Why they didn't do it, you'd have to ask them. But that will always go down, like Undertaker and Sting, it will always go down as a huge missed opportunity. It would have been a huge money match for them, too. I mean, you talk about attractions at WrestleMania. I mean, Undertaker against John Cena absolutely would have been an attraction. He says, I saw an article about a Hulk Hogan Netflix biopic with him being played by Chris Hemsworth. Do you know anything about it? And what do you think of the idea? Yeah, I last heard, I'm trying to think, the last I heard, which was last fall. So this would have been around September or October. The person writing the script said that there were COVID-related delays because I guess they have a lot of scenes. I mean, it's a movie about a wrestler. So they have a lot of scenes that would have required these large crowds of 20 and 30,000 people. But he was hopeful that they would start filming soon. So they still have not started filming. As far as, you know, the idea of the movie, I think it's interesting. I mean, you don't have to like Hulk Hogan to, I think, look at this and think that, okay, this would be an interesting project to see how someone like Chris Hemsworth, who has a name in Hollywood, would portray the guy, you know, on the big screen. So I'm intrigued by the idea. I'm intrigued by the concept. I would love it if they incorporated a lot of his lies and bullshit into the movie. That would make it more genuine. But yeah, they haven't started filming it yet. I guess COVID knocked them back a little bit, but it's still in development. It's not a dead project. And his last question here. As a wrestling fan since 2006, I was always a fan of Mr. Kennedy, and I was confused when he randomly lost the Money in the Bank briefcase to Edge on an episode of Raw, as well as his release from the company a few years later. I've heard the story of Randy Orton complaining that he was unsafe and hurt him on an episode of Raw. That being said, what do you think of Kennedy's untapped potential in WWE? I always wondered what his run would have looked like if he were the one to cash in on The Undertaker on that SmackDown, after the cage match against Batista and not Edge. Well, first of all, Kennedy was not going to cash in on The Undertaker that night because they had started this gimmick where he was going to wait until WrestleMania the following year. He was going to be the one where they would count down all the months, and at WrestleMania the following year, I think that was the idea, is that Kennedy would cash in. They only did what they did because, you know, things happened along the way. Now, Undertaker getting hurt and having to take the championship off of him, would they have, you know, deviated from that plan and put the belt on Kennedy? I guess it's possible. I mean, if Undertaker was hurt, they would have to put the belt on somebody. I mean, they could have just put it back on Batista. But I think the plan was to hold off until WrestleMania the following year and really milk this gimmick for the entire year. Kennedy would have been a world champion in the company. I don't know if his long-term future, I don't think Kennedy would have been a long-term main eventer in WWE. He would have been someone who would have been champion, he would have had a shot, but I think eventually he would have fizzled out. But he absolutely would have been a world champion at least once. And don't forget the angle with him, he was going to be Mr. McMahon's illegitimate son. That would have been a huge profile spot for him. But, you know, things didn't work out quite the way that he expected. And actually, he really got fucked on the Money in the Bank thing because the reason they took the title shot away from him, the briefcase away from him, is because he suffered an injury that they thought was serious and he was going to be out for a while and they thought he had a torn, I think, bicep or tricep. It turned out to be a really bad bruise. And nothing was torn, nothing was broken, he didn't need surgery. So they never had to take the briefcase away from him in the first place. They didn't take it away from him because he had heat. Took it away from him because they thought he was going to be out for months with an injury. Which I guess in a way, if you think about it, if he wasn't cashing in anyway until WrestleMania the following year, I mean, what sense does that really make? He still could have made appearances on TV. But no, I mean, he got fucked over on that first time. You know, later on, yeah, I mean, there were more than, it was more than just Randy Orton complaining about him behind the scenes. I think it was Randy Orton, it was John Cena, and it was Shawn Michaels. All of them supposedly had not so great things to say. They whispered in certain people's ears, and Kennedy lost his job. That's what happens in wrestling. You get heat, and it's hard to climb out of that hole once you're in the in a hole that deep. Neil from Chicago with a question pertaining to WrestleMania 39 and John Cena. If he is able to, who would you like to see John Cena face in next year's WrestleMania? He says, I have four opponents in mind, two already established and two younger guys who will be future headliners. I'm thinking either Drew McIntyre or Bobby Lashley to give them a big match at Mania, or Austin Theory or Bron Breakker. What say you? Feels too soon for Bron Breakker to be in the WrestleMania main event by next year. I think that's being a little ambitious. I like the idea of doing a Cena-Breakker match. I like the idea of Cena and Theory. There are certain things about Austin Theory when I see him on TV now that remind me of John Cena when he was first getting the big push, when he, you know, 2002, 2003. I think he could go on to be, I don't want to say he's going to be the next John Cena, but I think he absolutely will be a top player WrestleMania headliner for this company. And I look at a John Cena-Austin Theory potential match, and it really does look to me like the past against the future. And that's how you can bill it. And Theory has had great matches with people that he's been in the ring with. He's carried himself well. He doesn't go in there and, you know, embarrass himself or look out of place in there with some of the biggest names on the roster. So I like the idea of Cena against Theory. That is a match that intrigues me way more than Drew McIntyre against him or Bobby Lashley against him. I don't really have any interest in those matches, to be honest with you. As far as Cena opponents, I'd much rather see Cena in there against Theory. Victor from the Bronx. I saw WWE recently uploaded to YouTube a full match of Hulk Hogan against Brock Lesnar on SmackDown from August of 2002. What was the story behind that match? Why would they give that away for free? It happened in early August, so I assume it could have been held off until SummerSlam. It was never going to be SummerSlam because they already had Brock locked in to take the title from The Rock. So that's why they would not have done Lesnar and Hogan at SummerSlam. As I remember it, Hogan was dealing with knee issues and he had asked for some time off. It may have been his knee and his back. So that was going to be his last match until he healed up. Seth Mates, who was a writer for WWE at the time, he used to have a column on or a blog on the New York Newsday website. And he said the idea that they had was for Hogan to come back in a few months, and wrestle Brock Lesnar in a rematch at Survivor Series at Madison Square Garden going for his revenge. But instead of winning, Brock would beat him again. Only thing is, a month before Survivor Series, they were told that Hogan actually wanted to beat Brock and win the championship at Madison Square Garden, and there was no chance in hell of that happening, especially after they had already given him that token title run for a month earlier in the year. And it did absolutely nothing for business. If anything, it was bad for business. So instead, they decided to put Brock with Big Show and turn Brock babyface by having Paul Heyman turn against them. And Steve from Virginia, what is your favorite winner-take-all match where multiple titles were on the line in a single match? Hulk Hogan against the Ultimate Warrior, WrestleMania 6. Always will have a special place in my heart as a young wrestling fan. If I expanded that to a top three, the only other two that I thought were really good, or excellent was John Cena against Seth Rollins at SummerSlam in 2015. That was for the WWE title and the United States Championship. That was great until the John Stewart run-in at the end. And Keith Lee against Adam Cole at the Great American Bash 2 years ago for the NXT title and the NXT North American title. That was a great one, too. If you have questions, email me. Hit me with them. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. You never know when you might hear your question used on the show. I don't get the chance to use them all. I don't get the chance to respond directly to everybody, although I try to do that too. But I do read everything you send me, so send them on in. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. Which reminds me, we got to do a new members-only video Q&A very soon. So we're going to do the call-in show this week. I'm working on retro audio. I think in the next few weeks we'll also do another members-only Q&A for our channel members on there. But you know where to email me, at Solomonster on Twitter, at TheSolomonster. On Instagram is my handle on there. I am going to be live with you again. I am not 100% sure about this. I am leaning towards going live on Tuesday night after Vengeance Day and doing an NXT review. So I will keep you guys posted on that. So I might be going live Tuesday night. I'll definitely be live with you after Dynamite on Wednesday. I will be live on Thursday night with channel members for the call-in show, Better Call Solomonster. Friday night is Rampage and SmackDown, both taped shows. I'm kind of leaning towards not even bothering this week, to be honest with you. That one also, I'd say that's up in the air right now. But next Saturday, I will be live Saturday afternoon after Elimination Chamber. So I want to mention that now because I will not be back here with you until next Sunday, and that's after the pay-per-view. But yes, there will be a podcast next Sunday. That'll be episode 744. We'll talk about all the fallout from Elimination Chamber, all the other wrestling news and notes from the week. So, until then, be well. Stay safe. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody, if you are celebrating. It is a wonderful holiday for all the card companies and all the chocolate companies and all the flower people out there selling bouquets of flowers. It could be a huge week for 1-800-Flowers and Pro Flowers and FTD Flowers and Fuck Your Flowers and all the different flower companies. That's what Valentine's Day is. But anyway, until then, have a great week, and I will see you for the Elimination Chamber live review next Saturday and 7:44 on Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solomonster sounds off.
So the E-Drones came out, and oh my God, they were saying, oh, are you saying that the name Gunther is a Nazi name? Do you realize there are so many people named Gunther in the world that's so offensive? Didn't you watch Friends? No, actually, I didn't. Everyone's telling me about a barista from Friends. I don't watch fucking Friends. How the fuck am I supposed to know about the barista from Friends? What, does everybody watch Friends? I'm a Seinfeld guy. I don't watch Friends. Don't have them, don't need them, don't watch them.
The Solomonster sounds off. Each week, bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow the Solomonster on Twitter at Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Solomonster. Solomonster sounds off.